This is Dr. Aaron Kuzel, and this is the Louisville Pre-Hospital Care Podcast. Hello and welcome back again. This is Dr. Aaron Kuzel with the Louisville Pre-Hospital Care Podcast. I'm joined today with one of our pharmacy, emergency pharmacy residents, Dr. Carly Loudermilk, who's joining us to talk about psychiatric medications. Carly, tell us a little bit about yourself and welcome to the podcast.
Hi. So I'm a PGY2 emergency medicine resident here at U of L, originally born and raised in Georgia, did PGY1 in Augusta, Georgia. So big golf town, but now I'm here with all the horses and everything.
So why emergency pharmacy?
It's never boring. I hate rounds.
Same.
Yeah. And so that was the big thing. I really love how working very closely with the nurses and physicians and getting the hands-on excitement with the patients in the emergency department.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you for joining us and meeting with us so that we can bring this education to our EMS colleagues. So tell us about what your topic we are talking about today.
Yeah, so we're going to do a little overview of more like a toxicology or like overdose perspective for psychiatric medications. So with this, I really want everybody to kind of play detective in their work. So when we see a patient with a potential overdose on these medications, really want to try and get a working med list for them. So figure out what medications they're on, potentially the doses that they're on, how they're supposed to be taking it. And then we want to know like a time of ingestion, if possible, if there's any family or collateral around, and then the amount that they took. How much did they take? A handful, a full bottle? If family knows how much they took the last time they filled it, those kind of things.
Now, the large population of psych patients, they're actually the third most common cause or the third most common population for suspected overdose. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me why the time of ingestion and the dose is important from your perspective?
Yeah, I think that does play a very large role in it. Like you said, this is the third most common type of overdose. And so we really need to know how much and like when, so that can determine how we treat and what we're treating with, how much time we have maybe until we may see like a decline in the patient. So some of these can present as if nothing is happening and they'll be walkie-talkie when they come in the door, and they can decline very rapidly with some of these overdoses.
Is there anything from an EMS perspective that is useful for you as an emergency pharmacist when determining the antidotes to these commonly overdose medications? And is there anything that you really need from the crews from history standpoint? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we want to know the dose and how many pills suspected or what the scene looked like, but is there anything specific that you need as a pharmacist?
I think the biggest thing is trying to know what the medication is, because a lot of these, like our SSRIs, some of them are, it's like, oh, okay, they took a lot of fluoxetine or Prozac, but there are medications such as citalopram or Lexapro that can actually play a larger role. They can have like a little worse outcomes if they were to overdose on this, such as like Prozac.
And there's a lot of different types of these medications, so it can be really confusing. Mm-hmm. With multiple different trade names, a lot of different generic names that all sound very similar. Today we're going to talk about three of those. And what are those three that we're going to speak about?
Yeah, so we're going to cover our antipsychotics, our antidepressants, and then our benzodiazepines.
Can you give us, for the EMS, mm-hmm. who are probably not familiar with these type of medications, just a broad overview of these three different type of medications?
Absolutely. So with our antipsychotics, they can be broken down into typical and atypicals. Our typicals, they don't really follow a rule with their names. Always try to look them up if you can. We typically see like haloperidol or Haldol, clocorporazine, droperidol may be common around here, and flufenazine are a couple of examples. Some of our atypicals, so think of the ones that end in pine, done, and then our pips and rips. So think of clozapine, risperidone, and aripiprazole. Those are all examples of atypical antipsychotics.
Pips and rips. I haven't actually heard that one before, so that's actually good for my knowledge.
Yeah. And then moving on to our antidepressants, so we'll see our SSRIs or SNRIs. So think of fluoxetine or Prozac, sertraline, which is Zoloft, venlafaxine. But the ones that we really care about here would be like our citalopram or the Celexa, and then our Lexapro. Those can have some more adverse reactions or adverse effects in overdoses. So that's what we really care about in this classification. And then we'll move on to our TCAs, or our tricyclic antidepressants. So our nortriptyline, or amitriptyline, typically drugs that end in triptyline. Those are tricyclics. And then in this antidepressant group, we will cover Wellbutrin. And then finally, our benzos, so our drugs ending in PAM or LAM. So think of our lorazepam, clonazepam, diazepam, midazolam. So that one's kind of the outlier with the LAM ending.
That gives us kind of a broad overview of antipsychotics, antidepressants, and benzos. Let's go into a little bit more detail about the toxidromes and what my EMS provider should be looking for when you have these type of overdoses. Let's start with antipsychotics. Can you walk me through, and let's walk it through together, physical exam findings that you might see with Haldol or some of the atypicals like the clozapine or risperidone?
Yeah, so we're going to have our physical exam findings. These patients are typically going to present pretty lethargic, and they may not be able to protect their airway. Some other things that you may see would be seizures or anticholinergic effects with these medications. So with that, there are a couple different kind of like nursery rhymes, like mad as a hatter, red as a beet. So things you can think of that these patients may have would be dilated pupils. They may be confused. They may have dry mouth or urinary retention from that anticholinergic effect. They could be shaking and tachycardic. They may have absent bowel sounds, very flushed skin. They may present in a state of delirium.
So that was mad as a hatter, so confused. Dry as a bone, so dry and not having any type of sweating
secretions.
Or secretions. Red as a beet.
Yep. So
they'll
the
be flushed and red but not sweating. And blind as a bat. So they would have
pupils.
The dilated pupils. What about extrapyramidal symptoms?
So these can be typical with antipsychotics. So with this, I think of Parkinson's. You can kind of think of maybe if there's like some tongue rolling. I usually think of like stiffness. I don't know if there's anything else you typically think of.
Yeah, but extrapyramidal, like you'll see like this torticollis and kind of moving one side to the right of the neck, or you'll have some lip smacking. Now, there are two types of antipsychotics. There's typical and atypical. And remind me, I believe that one of those types, the atypical versus typical, is more common. Extrapyramidal symptoms.
Yeah, so it's typically our typical ones. So our like Haldol, droperidol, flufenazine, you can see that typically with those cool antipsychotics.
And these type of patients actually can receive IM injections or IV injections from like health departments and things. So it's not uncommon that, you know, provided they're getting good medicine and good dosing, but,
correct.
You know, it's hard to determine with this population. So there is always a risk that you may come across a patient with these typical antipsychotic
symptoms. Yeah, and a lot of times these patients can be treated for their EPS with things such as Benadryl. There's another layer added for anticholinergic symptoms from that, I guess, perspective, and they may be on medications such as, like, benztropine to kind of reduce those symptoms. So there are like an array of other medications that could potentially be on that could also increase.
And of course, while the treatment for extrapyramidal symptoms is diphenhydramine and treatment for that, I would defer to your protocols whether or not that is actually a indication for protocols or considering with medical control from that. So we talked a little bit about physical exam findings. What vital sign abnormalities or EKG findings may we find with these typical and atypicals?
Yeah, so our we may see hypotensive patients. They're probably going to present tachycardic. With our EKG specifically, you'll see a QRS prolongation or a QTC prolongation. In more severe cases, there could be torsades or nonspecific repolarization changes.
And typically that torsades is going to be when that QTC prolongs just enough, where there's kind of a mixture of different medicines on board that all prolong the QTC. And it is also possible from us as medical providers that we can accidentally prolong their QTC yeah. in addition to the medication that they're on. So it's always important to kind of look at the EKG prior to doing any kind of interventions in these tox patients because it can further prolong that QTC. Mm-hmm. You also can see hyperthermia, I believe, with these, especially when they're flushed. Even though they're not mm-hmm. diaphoretic, they're not able to, especially in that anticholinergic,
correct.
Not able to diaphorese appropriately. Yeah. So you may have to be on the lookout for hyperthermia and then mm-hmm. also seizures and possibly needing emergent ice buckets.
Gotta try and cool them down if possible.
Now, I know you spoke a little bit about the treatments in the beginning of the physical exam findings mm-hmm. when we talked about the diphenhydramine. Is there any other type of treatment or reversal agent?
So, unfortunately, for these overdoses, we do not have a specific reversal agent. A lot of it is just symptomatic and supportive care along the way. Just treat their symptoms. So, if they're agitated, you can give them benzos. You don't want to use droperidol, Haldol, or Zofran because then you have the potential of worsening their overdose mm-hmm. And their side effects. So, that QTC or QRS. If they were to have seizures, our go-to again is going to be benzos. And then really the most, pharmacotherapy that we can do would be for our EKG changes. So there's several different things. So if the patient were to experience torsades or VTAC, you want to know if they have a pulse first, but you typically treat this with magnesium. So 1 to 2 grams over 15 or so minutes. And if there's no response, then you can repeat this. So up to 4 grams in an hour.
Should you give the 2 grams just directly or should you
If they are pulseless, I would go ahead and give it IV, push. If they have a pulse, you can put it in a bag and, hang it to gravity, run it over about 10 minutes.
So like 50 to 100 cc's of D5W with the mag. And then you said if no response, you can give an additional 2 grams, mm-hmm. up to a total of 4 grams in an hour. Is there any reason that you couldn't cardiovert or defibrillate the patient?
So there is always that option. You want to know if they have a pulse or not. If they don't have a pulse, this is when we would do the defibrillation. And then if we're doing synchronized cardioversion, our dose is typically 50 to 100 joules.
And getting into that,
yes.
And that completely throws the tox component out of it and
yeah,
goes back
to more
the
to an ACLS algorithm. Yeah,
exactly. So just to summarize, we have the typicals and atypicals. Atypicals mm-hmm. being your risperidone and pioglitazone, more commonly prescribed in pill form than your typicals. Mm-hmm. Typicals are going to be one more that are injected, but they can be seen in the EMS world because we do have patients who get
true.
Intramuscular
yeah.
injections mm-hmm. weekly with schizophrenia and schizoid disorders. With those, we can see possibly seizures, mm-hmm. anticholinergic effects, and extrapyramidal symptoms. We can see that dry as a beet, mad as a hatter, that little nursery rhyme there. Vital signs are going to be some tachycardia and hypotensive, like many things, so it's going to be hard to differentiate that specifically, but EKG is really where the money's at, and looking to see if there's any QTC prolongation. And actually, when those patients come into the emergency department, any tox patient gets an EKG, and the reason is we're looking at that QTC
right.
prolongation. So you being on top of it and looking at the EKG, making sure they're not getting close to some VTAC or torsades. And then treatment, of course, agitation is going to be benzodiazepines and supportive.
Yep.
As it likely, it's not going to be diphenhydramine. And then if the patient is in distress or requiring ACLS, it would be normal ACLS procedures. But if torsades, again, ACLS is treating with magnesium.
Yeah, we had one more on here. So if we have our widened QRS, so a QRS greater than 120, so usually when we're getting above 100 is kind of where we're getting into our little, it kind of scares me at that point. So especially when we get greater than 120, this is when we would want to treat. So you would treat this with sodium bicarbonate, and it's 1 to 2 milliequivalents per kgs. And this is just an IV push. Typically, if you have like the vials or there's the Carpegex that we use for ACLS here at the hospital, like an amp of sodium bicarb, you can repeat this if needed. But typically, we're using this for the sodium component, as some of these medications can act as sodium channel blockers.
And that's a great point that you brought up, because we talk about TCAs coming up,
mm-hmm.
and that's a really good point. And most of our EMS protocols talk about bicarb and TCA overdose with the known.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a little bit complicated with sodium bicarb, because it is only used in EMS in certain protocols.
Okay.
And so it really is dependent upon the protocols that you have, and whether or not that for an overdose do you give sodium bicarb. So this is what we do in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and this is what we have the training trained pharmacists in. So it's important that when you're thinking of sodium bicarb, follow your protocols, not exactly what we do in the hospital, what's approved by your medical director. But in these overdoses, or maybe even sometimes in cardiac arrest, this might not be a bad option. If you're suspecting that the patient, if you're working in arrest and you suspect that the patient has overdosed, and there's enough evidence to suggest that it's either been a TCA or some type of wide QRS seen on the EKG, well, you're not really going to get that in CPR, but you can at least get some type of sodium component with that sodium bicarb to try to help unblock those sodium channels.
All right. So I guess that would move us on to our antidepressants.
Let's talk about antidepressants.
Treatment. So with our SSRIs and our SNRIs, they're kind of boring a little bit, except for the citalopram and Lexapro. These are important because these two can cause QTC prolongation.
Okay.
So typically, these are the ones that kind of want you to think of or like ring a bell if a patient were on them, because we would be looking for this QTC prolongation, potential torsades, VTAC, and you would treat it the exact same way as I just went over before. So our magnesium, if that weren't to work and they were to lose a pulse, you may need to go into the ACLS algorithm. Some other side effects that they may experience is serotonin syndrome. Typical findings with serotonin syndrome are altered mental status. They can present hyperthermic. They have this hyperreflexia. They can have diarrhea, hyperactive bowel sounds, and mydriasis, or the pupil dilation as well.
It's really hard to tell serotonin syndrome from like neuromuscular syndrome, NMS, because of it, they all have altered mental status, hyperthermia, hyperreflexia. One of the things that we, as a buzzword in the medicine side of the house, is Clonus, which is going to be your very hyperreflexes. In a sense, you hit the reflexes on the knee or on the Achilles, and instead of the extremity kind of flexing back, when you hit the knee, the patella, everyone's seen the patella reflex from either from a TV show, it actually, the leg sticks out for a couple seconds longer and actually kind of looks like it's like held there until it releases and then allows it to come back gently. So that's one of the biggest things to see is serotonin syndrome, is they're going to be hot, flushed, they're going to have dilated pupils, they're going to probably be diarrhea and sweating, and that's probably a good indication that you're in that serotonin syndrome. And if you tap on their knee, they're going to kick you in the face.
Yep. But that's pretty much what we would do as far as the EMS crews would just be remember the QTC prolongation and how we treat that. That would move us into our tricyclics. So these are very scary.
Oh, yes, they're very scary.
Yeah, these are your patients that will come in walkie-talkie and then 20, 30 minutes down the line, they can be obtunded, no longer able to protect their airway. So typically, you can see them, they'll go into like this delirious state, very agitated, and then they'll get very somnolent. And then, like I said, this will progress into the inability to protect their airway. They can present very anticholinergic. So earlier, how we were talking about red as a bee, they're dry, they have the dilated pupils. So keep all of those things in mind that we saw earlier with our antipsychotics. Moving into management for that. So you have this cardiac toxicity. So a lot of these are sodium channel blockers. So this is when our sodium bicarb truly comes into play, typically. And we can give our 1 to 2 milliequivalent per kg boluses here and repeat, repeat, repeat. Of course, go off protocol, but typically repeat, repeat, repeat until we have some stabilization there.
Is there anything from an EMS standpoint that you'd want to know from the scene or from their documentation or from just their appearance of the patient as they're calling in report, or that heightens their suspicion of TCA, or what you would want to know from an EMS perspective?
Always drug. They can give us a dose, but if they have a potential drug on hand, that would be great. I would love to have a potential EKG on hand so we know what the QRS is.
Or at least having a baseline for when they get here all of a sudden now the QRS is 140 when it was 110. Now we know that the medicine is getting, we have a farther progression of that toxic case.
Exactly, and you know, were they talking to you when you got on scene? Are they not talking to you anymore en route? That kind of thing. So to help us figure out how far they are into that progression, because we have seen patients here that will come in talking to us and then all of a sudden they're in room 9 getting tubed.
Yeah, they now have a assisted airway device.
Yes, yes.
Now, let's talk about one that's used pretty often, bupropion or Wellbutrin.
Yeah.
And it's even used for patients who are trying to quit smoking.
Smoking and weight loss. Mm-hmm. So there are numerous patients that are on it for different reasons, but this can be a very scary overdose because it can cause treatment-resistant seizure activities and arrhythmias. So it essentially lowers your seizure threshold and puts you at greater risk of having a seizure if you were to overdose on it. So very scary. You essentially treat with benzos, you manage the airway, and then you drive fast and get to the hospital as quick as you can.
Do benzos typically work?
They do work. It's not like as great as if it was just like a status patient because you have lowered this seizure threshold, but it is still our drug of choice.
And then what about if you have a benzodiazepine overdose?
Yeah, so this is typically going to be our supportive care. So, you know, if they're hypotensive, given fluids, we're going to try our best to avoid flumazenil because we don't want to send these people into withdrawal or into seizures that are then refractory to benzos because now you're blocking how the benzos work and how they stop seizures. So then you're moving on to more older therapies for seizures, which many people may not be as familiar with or comfortable with as we are with benzos because they are our everyday go-tos. And so that kind of convolutes the picture a little bit.
And it'd be very difficult to treat it in the field when because your only option is benzos in the field.
Yes, yeah. So we don't like to throw around flumazenil as much. There are certain patients every now and then, but if it's somebody that is chronically taking benzodiazepines, I'm not going to throw it on them because you will more than likely precipitate seizures in them.
And treatment for these patients is going to be very, very similar to what we do for any patients with Optundet. Mm-hmm. Just imagine your opiate overdose. They're going to be very similar. They're going to be similar and different in some aspects is that they're going to be their airway is both going to be compromised.
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine you give the guy or gal 10 milligrams of Versed and they just stop, they start slowly breathing and you now have to bag them to the hospital. That's going to be very similar to like an opiate and to a benzo mm-hmm. overdose as well. And so basic airway management, symptomatic care is going to be the most important. So bagging nasal pharyngeal airway. If you need to intubate, hopefully not. Sometimes we can get them through, but it really depends on their GCS. If their GCS is poor, then, I mean, they've got enough sedation medicine to likely intubate.
Yeah.
And if they've adjusted a whole full 90 pill Ativan, it's probably going to end up that the patient's going to be intubated.
Yeah,
now, the good news is this gets pretty much cycled through the system within 24 hours, and they end up being discharged to a psychiatric facility once they regain and they're improved. And it's, again, the same things apply, EKG looking for QTC prolongation as well. Well, Carly, that sounds like a great topic. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I'm sure the EMS providers will appreciate it and have many questions for you. Thank you for taking the time, and we appreciate you sharing your experience with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is great, and hopefully there are some key things that you guys can take away from this.
Thank you all, and stay safe out there.